Hey guys, before we get started, I wanted to thank you for your continued patience while we work out the recording kinks. This episode is going to be particularly wonky in some areas. I promise, promise, promise that it will get better. Just pretend we're gal pals and we're on a phone call and I'm driving through a tunnel or something. We love you guys. Thank you for your support and your feedback. And with that being said, let's get back to the show. Hello, I'm Candace.
And this is Elena.
And this is Cousins on Crime. Hello, thank you for coming back for episode three. In episode one, we discussed the mass murder in Blue Mountain, Texas. With the information I was able to access for that case, I tried to describe the small town and give you a general idea of what happened there. And by the way, when I talked about how little the homes were in Blue Mountain, I wasn't intending to belittle the area or the residents of the area. I come from humble beginnings myself, and I turned out okay. I think everyone deserves justice. I don't care who you are.
Sing it, girl.
I'm just kidding, I won't sing. But it was important to the story to note just how small this community was because when you live in a tiny town like that, there's a sense of security and safety.
And closeness with the neighbors.
Exactly. And a lot about that case, as far as timeline goes, came from the neighbors. And that speaks to the tight-knit community. And, they talk about it's a neighborhood where people don't lock their doors. And so that town had never seen anything like what happened that night. And maybe that's why the case went so cold so quickly. Maybe law enforcement were not used to this and they just were not equipped to handle something of this magnitude at the time.
Well, and like the investigator had made mention of the people of Blue Mound, how he didn't have a good opinion of them, and that was his opinion, not ours. And his opinion, we mentioned it just to show that he didn't hold this murder as important.
Exactly. And you can kind of see the prejudice or predisposition there. I don't know where Chief Irwin lived, but he, just because he was a police officer in Blue Mound, doesn't mean he lived in Blue Mound.
True.
And actually, most of the police officers that I know don't live in the jurisdiction that they police. So this predisposition or this notion towards the community could have really impacted the investigation.
True.
So the details are important because you have to think about things like this when trying to wrap your brain around the investigation being so botched and how this could have happened, how it could have gone so cold. Was it the prejudice or was it actually the other murders that happened just a few months later? I had told you guys in episode one that I wanted to cover that case at some point, and today is the day. I thought, why make you guys wait? Y'all are probably laying in bed, just wondering what I was talking about. So I'm gonna give it to you today.
Right. Yeah, I'm interested.
And I gotta say, the media coverage and the investigation efforts on the Blue Mound case and the case I'm gonna talk to you about today were night and day. I mean, whereas I was scrounging for details about the Blue Mound case, autopsy reports, and what have you, there was no end to the information I found on this case. So
Wow.
that's why it's coming to you in two parts. Sorry, guys.
All right. I haven't heard anything about it, so I'm interested.
Okay, well, growing up, I had heard mansion murders. I never really knew what anybody was talking about. And It was just one of those notorious things that was floating around Fort Worth, and I had just never really knew the details. I wish I had, because I'll tell you why later on.
Okay.
So this will be part one, but don't get your panties in a bunch because part two will come out on Friday. So you're not going to have to wait that long for the conclusion. And you're going to want to hold on to those panties because this case is really wild. There's just so much happened, and there wasn't just one trial in this case, and so much happened after the murder trial. It just needs to be told, all of it. And I know if you're a real diehard true crime fan, you like all the deets just as much as I do. So let's just dive into this case. Here we
Okay.
go.
All right.
Thomas Cullen Davis went by Cullen. And just a little sidebar here, every time I typed Cullen in my notes, I was like, where do I know that name? Cullen. Who is that? Oh my God. Edward Cullen, Twilight.
Oh my goodness. My goodness. He's a vampire.
Yeah, so every time I typed Cullen in my notes, I was thinking that I was writing about Edward Cullen, and then I got really distracted. Sorry, guys, I'm getting off on a tangent here.
Yeah.
So, anyways, let's get back to it. Cullen was a multimillionaire oil tycoon in Fort Worth, Texas, where Lena and I are from. Lena actually still lives there. Yeehaw! Fort Worth is probably best known for the stockyards and being close to Dallas, but he had inherited a substantial fortune from his father
Oh.
and then made some of his own wealth through his own business dealings. He had had some squabbles with his brother over things to do with the business, as far as like what his dad had left them. And there are many different figures floating around out there about how much he was actually worth. Some say 250 million. I read one report even said 500 million.
Wow.
Either way, he had way more money than anyone he knew, especially back then. So the actual figure is probably not important here.
He just had a lot of money.
Right, 250 million and 500 million is the same to me. They are both amounts of money that I will never have. So, unless I won the lottery, which would be great.
Yeah.
I would appreciate that.
Let me know if you do.
For sure. I got you, girl. And I wouldn't do what he did if I actually won the lottery. So, anywho, Cullen was married with two boys when he met a woman named Priscilla on the tennis court. And, you know, as you do when you meet a hot blonde on the tennis court, you leave your wife for her. Am I right?
I mean, I guess.
Well, he and his first wife were actually on the outs. They were nearing divorce anyway because she had accused him of abuse. Allegedly, he slapped her in public and did even worse things to her in private. So Cullen and Priscilla fell very hard and quickly for each other, and they married in 1968. Priscilla herself also had children. She brought three children into this union. Andrea and Jack Jr., he went by Jackie, they shared the same dad, and she had an older daughter named Dee, who was from her previous marriage. Her kids were really, really close and thought of each other as real brothers and sisters, not half siblings. And in fact, they didn't even know they were half siblings until after the events occurred and they read about it in the paper. That's when they found out, but they were super, super close. Dee said of Andrea, her younger sister, that she was an old soul and that she was much wiser than your typical 12-year-old. She loved art and animals were drawn to her. Like they would go outside and any animal would come up to her, lizards, squirrels, just anything. She loved it. And her family knew it was because she just had a really gentle nature about her. So, Cullen Davis designed and built the Stonegate Mansion on a little over 170 acres for him and his then wife, Priscilla, and her kids. And like I had said earlier in the episode, he also had two children, but there was no mention of whether or not they lived with them in the mansion. I just assume they lived with their mom because they weren't mentioned. But this mansion was an absolute monstrosity.
Are you going to be posting pictures?
Yes, I will be posting pictures of this mansion on our Instagram. It took 4 years to build, and it had 5 bedrooms, 11 bathrooms, and was over 13,000 square feet. Now, the master bedroom alone was 2,000 square feet.
I just don't know what I would do with all that.
Right, but do you know what I've always wondered? Why mansions have so few bedrooms and so many
More
bathrooms?
bathrooms than bedrooms.
I could understand having a couple extra bathrooms. I don't know, maybe there's so much space in the house that you need a bathroom in every wing. I don't have a mansion, so I wouldn't know if it's necessary to have 11 bathrooms for 5 bedrooms. Plus, why are you gonna have a 13,000 square foot house and only 5 bedrooms?
Well, maybe they had like two kitchens, two or three living rooms, who knows?
I guess I just, if I had that kind of space, I would want all kinds of bedrooms. So,
Your family could come stay or.
yeah, so all my family could come stay. But I guess with that kind of money, you've never had to clean your own toilet, so it doesn't really matter how many toilets there are.
Oh, yeah, you can just hire a maid.
Yeah, true. Anyway, I digress. It had top of the line everything. And everything was automated. And back in that day, that was really something. I mean, the drapes were automated. There was like
Wow.
speakers and intercoms. It had an indoor swimming pool. I actually,
What?
this is crazy. I came across a video in my research of these guys breaking into the mansion and walking around. And this was in 1991. It was abandoned at this time, so nobody was there, but they found this secret door. It looked like just part of the wall. And when they like pressed on it, it popped open. And there was like a little, it looked like just a cupboard in there, like where maybe they kept their liquor or something.
Okay.
It was quite a big room, but it looked kind of like a walk-in pantry. But they were walking around. They found the swimming pool. It was empty, had a bunch of gross
Oh, of
stuff.
course. Is it still abandoned?
Well, I'll get to that.
You'll get, okay, I'll wait.
I'll get to that. You just hold on to your panties, okay?
Okay.
And by the way, that's the last time I'll mention panties in this episode.
I don't believe you.
Maybe. Anywho, I'm getting really off track here. Priscilla's older daughter, Dee, described the mansion as never really feeling like home. Like I said, I mean, it was grossly oversized. It was filled with all of the finest things. They had famous paintings. They had Renoir paintings. It just looked like a museum to her. It didn't feel like a home. And I can imagine for a child that paintings and fine furniture and that all just probably registers as pointless, you know, just especially when they didn't come from money. Priscilla's ex-husband, not Dee's dad, but Andrea and Jackie's dad. He was a used car salesman, so it's not like they came from money, and all of this stuff just seemed a little bit over the top and sterile. Seemed a little bit over the top.
Gotcha.
So check out our Instagram. I'll be posting pictures of the outside. It really looks like, to me, it doesn't even look like a home. It looks like medical office buildings, like a
Oh,
medical office or something, like a nice one.
wow.
Don't get me wrong, it is nice. But it kind of looks like maybe where you'd go and get plastic surgery or something. It just doesn't look like a house. It looks
Looks
like,
very square.
yeah, it's kind of square, kind of.
Because I think back in the 60s, 70s time frame, weren't houses like more square? I don't know.
It's a very specific kind of architecture. It's really hard to describe. You'll just have to look. And I'm describing this house to you in so much detail because, one, it's interesting, but it also speaks to Colin Davis's character. He said in an interview that he spent 5 years thinking of what he wanted his dream home to look like. He would cut out pictures from magazines. He basically handed the architect a handful of clippings out of magazines and said, build me this house.
Wow.
So his character was basically, I'm going to get what I want. It was this over-the-top, grandiose display of wealth and materials. Dee said in one interview that she would just catch him standing there with his hands on his hips, and he would just be looking around, like marveling at the amazingness that was his home.
That he created.
Exactly. I mean, he was proud. Hey, if you got it, flaunt it, you know?
I guess so.
So things were really great for Cullen and Priscilla for a while. They went to galas. They had dinner parties. They were very much socialites. They were a little outrageous with their behavior. There was some talk of some sexual things they did in public, like at a restaurant.
No.
Yeah. So they basically just did what they wanted around town.
Didn't care. Okay.
Yeah. They didn't care. I could tell you some other things, but let's just leave those details out, because what's important is what happened after the demise of their relationship. Okay. Things really soured in 1974 after being married for 6 years. They didn't make it to the 7-year itch. They didn't make it. Priscilla filed for divorce, and they were thrust into a contentious divorce proceeding. It was epic, and it was the talk of the town. They were fighting over money and property. It was ugly on all sorts of levels. Priscilla had remained in the mansion during the pending divorce, and she wanted to settle for $50 million. And you know what? You go, girl. You get every last dollar you can. There was accusations of infidelity on both sides, actually. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, Priscilla had accused Cullen of breaking her nose and her collarbone during some of the many times that he beat her during their marriage.
Oh, man.
Priscilla's older daughter, Dee, also claims to have suffered abuse at the hands of Cullen, and that he beat her so mercilessly one time that she had blood in her urine.
So internal bleeding, okay.
But in 1976, after 2 years of battling it out in divorce court, a judge had just increased the alimony payments that Priscilla would receive from Cullen. And she was receiving $3,500 a month.
Hmm.
And he had enforced a $5,000 a month alimony payment. So she was riding the alimony pony.
Right. Yeah. And that was a lot of money in 76.
That's a lot of money now.
Yeah.
If that's alimony payment, that's a good amount of money. $5,000 a month.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? The judge also awarded her $50,000 for legal fees. Cullen was furious about this. She was not only living in the mansion for the past couple years while they were battling it out, but he was also banished by the court from entering the home at all.
Oh, wow.
So she was living in his house. He couldn't even go in there. To him, that was his house.
Right.
I get it. I mean, he sat there in his little armchair with his little clippings of rooms, and he had invested so much of himself into this house. It was the vision that he brought to life, and, you know, not to mention he was paying for it still.
Right.
And at this point, they had long since moved on. They were both with other people. Cullen was living with his new girlfriend, Karen Master. And Priscilla was dating a guy named Stan Farr, who was a former Texas Christian University basketball player. Mm-hmm. So on the night of August 2nd, 1976, just a day after Cullen was faced with his new financial setback, the increased alimony payment we talked about earlier.
Right.
Priscilla and Stan had gone out on the town, as they did much of the time. You know, they went to dinner. They also went to a nightclub afterwards for some drinks. Priscilla was just enjoying her newfound freedom. She was really excited to be with a man that treated her nicely.
Starting a new chapter.
Exactly. And he was so tall. I think he was 6'7". She was really short. And so he just towered over her. She probably felt really safe with him after being in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Her older daughter, Dee, was at a friend's house that night. So it was just Andrea who was left home alone. And I actually couldn't find any information where Jackie was, her son, but he wasn't home either. Andrea being left home alone was not really out of the ordinary. They had a very robust security system. They felt safe leaving her there. And plus, she had homework to do. So they were like, you need to do your homework and we'll be home later. So Priscilla and Stan arrived back home around midnight that night. And she had noticed when they walked in that the security alarm was disarmed. Stan went upstairs to check things out. He was probably looking for Andrea, making sure everything was okay, because they had left her home. Shortly thereafter, Priscilla was confronted by a man dressed in all black and wearing a wig. He pulled out a gun and he said, "Hi," and then shot her once in the chest.
Oh, wow.
And Stan heard the shot and he and like the scuffle and he ran downstairs and he was shot twice and then he fell to the floor and then was shot two more times. Then a car pulls up outside and I'm assuming there was some type of elongated period where Stan was shot twice and then he probably lunged because he was a big guy. It probably took four shots to get this guy down.
Oh my goodness.
And so while this is all going on, they hear this car pulling up and the gunman kind of looks out and Priscilla just like sees her chance and she runs out. She just takes off running. She's
After
shot.
being shot.
Yeah, she was shot. Stan was shot and down. And so she's like, I'm out of here. I've got to just run. Like,
Oh
just
no.
in the pitch dark, she takes off running. She ran to a neighbor's house. And when she got there, she said, Cullen is trying to kill me. So she immediately identified
New,
the
right.
shooter as Cullen, even though he was in a wig and he was in all black. He wasn't wearing a mask or anything. And when you've been with someone for 6 years, you'd probably know.
Right.
In the car that pulled up in the driveway was Beverly Bass, Priscilla's friend, and her boyfriend Gus Gavril, who went by Bubba. The gunman fired at the car and struck Bubba, and Beverly got her booty out of that car and she said, "Cullen, it's me, don't shoot." Like
Oh.
she's like called him by name, and when he did shoot at her, she starts running through the night. And
Oh
she
my
flagged
goodness.
down a passing car. So here there's a second person now identifying Cullen as the shooter. And
Wow.
she knew Cullen. She had been friends with Priscilla. She would know, right?
Right, his
Okay.
build, the way he walks, yeah.
Exactly. When police officers arrived, they found a broken floor-to-ceiling window. Glass was everywhere, and there was blood throughout the first floor. They make their way through the first floor, noting all this blood. There was a big blood smear, and I'll post some photos. They're not gruesome or anything, but I'll post some of the photos on our Instagram so you can kind of get a feel for it. But you can see like blood swipes going into the kitchen where Stan was eventually found.
Oh.
It looks like he probably tried to scoot.
Get to a phone or
They made their way throughout the first floor. They went into the kitchen. Like I said, they found Stan crumpled up on the floor, and he was determined to be dead at the scene. Priscilla and Bubba were taken to the hospital to be treated for their gunshot wounds, and Beverly was held to be questioned there at the scene. So they asked her what happened. They didn't put her under arrest or anything. She's seen in one of the crime scene photos, like sitting in a police car, having a cigarette and talking to them about what happened. Bubba was paralyzed from his injury, which is really sad because he was just there
oh,
to drop off Beverly.
in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly. Can you imagine? Yeah, he was just there to drop off Beverly to spend the night, and he was going to leave. So back in the home, police had made their way through the home. When they got down to the basement, They found 12-year-old Andrea's body.
No.
Like her mom, she had been shot once in the chest. So, like I said, Priscilla identified the gunman as her estranged husband. She did when she got to the hospital. Dee met her at the hospital and she said, Cullen tried to kill me. She did to the police. And Beverly Bass also, again, identified him in her statement when she was being questioned by the police. Priscilla said she saw his face and begged him to stop, and there was no doubt in her mind that it was Cullen. She even said she begged him not to shoot her and called him by name because she was just pleading for her life. And even though he hated her, she hated him, she thought, well, I'm gonna give this a shot. I'm gonna give it a
Oh,
shot, you know?
goodness.
So with this information, the police had a clear suspect and they were like, let's go get him. So they tracked down Cullen at his girlfriend's house, Karen. Before they got there, though, Cullen's brother Ken had called him to tell him what had happened at the mansion. And Ken says that Cullen reportedly said, well, I guess I'm going back to bed now, before they hung up.
No care in the world.
But Cullen told police that earlier in the evening he had gone to see Bad News Bears at the cinema alone. Then he went to Karen's house and he had stayed there for the rest of the night, and that he was sleeping at the time the murders occurred. His girlfriend Karen said she took a sleeping pill that night, so she couldn't really swear he was with her in bed that whole time.
What a shame.
Now, right here, I think it's odd that he says he went to a movie alone. Why didn't Karen go with him? Why didn't he go with
Maybe she
anyone
wasn't
else?
interested in those kind of movies.
Well, maybe. I just find it hard to believe that a socialite would go to the movies on his own, you know?
Alone, yeah.
But that's just me, I guess. They informed him they were taking him into custody for the shootings, but they allowed him to get dressed because he was in his night clothes. So they let him get dressed. He went so far as to put on a sports jacket.
Oh, goodness.
Then they gently escorted him to the police car without handcuffing him. So must be nice to be rich.
Well, and also that's a tactic to help people feel safer that they could trust them, that he's not in a lot of trouble. We just need to talk to you.
True. Cullen proclaimed his innocence and immediately lawyered up. He retained one of the best defense attorneys in the state, Richard Racehorse Haynes. So they were taking him into custody, but he was under
I've heard of
arrest.
that
They
guy
did.
in another story that I've heard.
Really? Ooh. We gotta probably look
Yeah, I
that one
can't
up.
remember who it was, but yeah.
But the judge set bail at just $80,000. And he was back home in time to sleep in his own bed. I think they should have really capitalized on this bail. You've got,
$80,000 for how many
I
people are
know,
dead now? At least two people dead?
two people are dead. One is paralyzed, and he tried to kill two more people. So you've got a man who has all the money in the world. You know he's going to be able to make bail. Like, I just feel like the state of Texas should have been like setting your bail at $1 million.
interesting.
They should have really capitalized on that, but
Yeah.
they set it at $80,000 and he had a cashier's check drafted up and he was back home by the end of the day.
And safe asleep in his bed.
Exactly. But they did put him under surveillance. He was a major flight risk, no pun intended, but he did have a PJ, you know, a private jet, and he could have been anywhere he wanted at any time. So about a month later, he did in fact try to take off.
Saw that one coming.
Right. He was walking to his PJ when he was confronted by the police. They're like, oh, where are you off to? And he's like, oh, I'm just heading to Houston for a quick business trip. They're like, nah. So
No,
this
you're going to
time they
stay right
did
here.
exactly. They handcuffed him this time. And they took him in and indicted him for Andrea's murder. So they were able to, even though he didn't have a lot of bags, like he was going to be gone for an extended period of time, they said because he could change his flight, a destination at any point in the journey, they were going to take him in just for violating that, for that violation. So
Good
now
for
that
them.
he's back in, now that he was back in jail, they continued their investigation into Cullen. They spoke with people who knew him, and one person in particular, Dee, we've talked about Priscilla's older daughter, she told them that Cullen had a really bad temper, and she told them about the abuse. So things that had to be his way or the highway. There was an incident where they went to a restaurant, and she referred to it as, the daily specials. If something wasn't a daily special and they didn't make it that day, he would expect them to make it for him,
Oh
even
no.
though it might have been a different daily special. I mean, he was very assertive and not in a good way. And she told them that he didn't just abuse her and her mother. He one time threw her kitten to the ground and killed it.
Oh. Well, you know what they say about people who abuse animals.
Exactly.
They become murderers.
Exactly. If you're going to hurt an animal, it's an easy jump to kill a human. Dee said she was afraid of him, and she was always on edge when he came home. She would know the sound his car made when it pulled into the driveway, whether or not he slammed his door, when he got out of the car, or whether or not he slammed the front door. And she would even pay attention to how his shoes sounded when he was walking through the home, and whether or not he said hi to the dogs. Like, you know what I'm saying? If he was in a good enough mood to say hi to the dogs, because let's not forget about the poor kitten. And for a while during their marriage, Priscilla had shrugged off and just kind of brushed off this behavior by Cullen. Because, I mean, back in the 70s, men weren't held to the standard that they are today. I mean, if Priscilla had come forward with these allegations of abuse to the police at the time, number one, he was so wealthy and powerful, and he was a local celebrity, and they probably would have asked her what she did to piss him off. I mean, it was just those
Possibly.
times, He ruled his home with an iron fist, and no one was going to challenge that. So, with the three eyewitness testimonies and his history of violence, the investigators began to really hone in on Cullen Davis as the perpetrator of these murders and attempted murders. He seemed to be the only person who had a motive to want Priscilla dead. Priscilla was in the mansion that he built, that he was obsessed with. He was facing that huge financial loss in their pending divorce, on top of the fact that the judge had just increased his alimony payment to Priscilla, and he hated her. I mean, he hated her, all that aside, and he told anyone who would listen how much he hated her. Other than the three eyewitness testimonies, there sadly really was not any physical evidence at the crime scene. There was no gun they could link to the bullets. It was basically circumstantial evidence that they were trying to work with here. They didn't have fibers. They couldn't find fingerprints that would have implied that he
Footprints.
had fit. Exactly. I mean, he had lived there, so of course his fingerprints might have been.
Or some, well, did they do a lot of DNA back then? I mean, of
No, they
course his
didn't.
DNA is going to be all over the place. Okay,
Right, of course, but I'm just thinking he hadn't been there in like 2 years. So they're
True.
not going to find any fresh, they shouldn't find any fresh evidence that he was there if he probably didn't touch anything when he was there except the alarm. Now, something I couldn't find the information about, but it's just like a question, a food for thought, if you will. So there was a broken window. It was like a floor-to-ceiling glass window. Like this place had floor-to-ceiling windows just
Gotcha.
All around. This window was broken. Like you could have walked inside. I don't know if he broke that window and walked inside and then turned off the alarm. Because the alarm was off. And the other thing is, did Andrea, I don't think she would have turned the alarm off and let him in.
Right.
I just don't think that would have happened. So
especially being by herself with his history.
Exactly. So he may not have opened that door with a key. You know, he may not have opened it. Because there was nothing said about whether the door was unlocked or not.
Oh,
it was
okay.
just said that the alarm system had been turned off.
So it just seems obvious that he would have walked through the window. But there's no brick or anything that's like,
no.
That busted the window?
And he probably thought that nobody was home. He probably, this is just speculatory now. This is just me talking to you over a coffee, if you will. But I think maybe he shot the window and entered that way and then turned the alarm off and it beeped. And then maybe Andrea came down because she heard the noise. No telling where she was inside the mansion.
Right.
But there were reports that she was physically taken down to the basement where
okay.
she was shot. I don't know how they knew that, but there was some evidence that they could figure out that that's what had happened. But other than those things, there wasn't anything physical to tie him to the crime, just the eyewitnesses. And when they found Colin at his girlfriend's house, they asked him if he had a gun. And he was like, yeah, it's in the trunk of my car. And they're like, okay, can you get that? And he's like, sure. And he handed it over. And it wasn't a match to the murder weapon, which... Why would you hand over the murder weapon?
Obvious.
So they had nothing really. They didn't have anything concrete. Another interesting thing that happened at that time was when they went to Karen's house and they arrested him, a detective asked him why two people had to die. And he allegedly responded, there are some things you don't need a reason for.
Oh.
And this is widely documented. This detective, he reported it. And John McKay did an interview with Colin Davis in 2017. And he had asked him about this incident. Like, did you say that or remember saying that?
Uh-huh.
And Colin said, I remember him saying that, but I don't remember saying that. I could have. What? If you're innocent, why would you even think that you would have said something like that?
I know. Just so nonchalant.
If a detective asked me that question, I don't really know what I would say, but depending on who he was asking me about, I assume that I would know the people he's talking about, right?
Right.
But I don't know what I would say, but I can tell you for sure it wouldn't be, there are some things you just don't need a reason for. It wouldn't be that.
No.
Some reports said that the movie Bad News Bears wasn't even in theaters the night of murders.
Hmm.
So he couldn't have been there earlier in the night.
So then why would he choose that movie?
Don't know. And this was not brought up in court. This was not, this little discrepancy was never brought up in the trial. So, the trial. Well, first was the trial for Andrea's murder. During the trial, Colin was like an icon. I told you he was a local celebrity. He was signing autographs. He was accepting, he was accepting baked goods from admirers. Like people were bringing him cupcakes and cakes and just like homemade pies. Yeah. He was smiling for every camera that was there. Every time one was in the vicinity, he would look over and do a dashing smile, especially given that Cullen's defense strategy was to turn the attention off of him and to discredit the eyewitnesses. So he was putting on this air like he was perfect so he could destroy the eyewitnesses in court. So Haynes, Cullen's primary defense attorney, I say primary because he had hired like this dream team of attorneys, but he was basically lead counsel. He suggested that Priscilla and her friend Beverly were conspiring to frame Cullen for their
All right,
crimes.
so let's kill her daughter to make
Exactly.
him look bad.
Right. But they reported it was him to two different people that night, and they didn't see each other because they were running for their lives in separate directions. Priscilla had run before Beverly even got out of the car. She ran to a neighbor's house. Beverly ran in another direction trying to flag down a car. So, like, what did they do? Like, Priscilla yelled over to Beverly as she's running the opposite way, "Hey, Beverly!
Hey, it was Colin.
That was crazy. I'm hit. What about you?" Beverly's like, "No, girl, I didn't get hit." And Priscilla's like, "Okay, well, never mind. I don't know where Andrea's at. I don't know what, her get condition or anything, but let's just say Colin did this. Okay, bye. See you
Thanks, friend.
later." I don't think so. I don't think that's plausible, but Haynes did a really great job of villainizing Priscilla on the stand. He grilled her about her sex life, her character, whatever else nasty he could dig up on her. I mean, he insulted the way she dressed. He insulted the way she dressed at the trial, even though she was wearing like, really nice suit skirt combination. He basically was just ripping her to shreds. He brought up drug use and sex parties and all these things that were just distasteful enough to make the jury completely forget she was a grieving mother
Oh, man.
and grieving girlfriend. And he kept her on the stand for 11 days.
Oh, wow.
11 days. And as far as who might have actually committed the crimes, the defense strategy was ABC. Anybody but Cullen. They suggested Stan Farr was the actual target because he worked at nightclubs and allegedly knew drug dealers. And they had suggested that Priscilla was caught up in some nasty drug deals with some, quote, scallywags, unquote. And something Cullen and his dream team did at the trial that was particularly nasty, and this didn't come to light until years later, they bribed an investigator for the DA to get information from the prosecution so that they would be equipped to like counteract their
Oh,
strategy. So they would,
that's nasty.
that is low. The trial lasted 3 months. And the jury returned a verdict in 4 hours. What do you think that verdict was, Elena?
Well, I'm going to say probably not guilty with all of these people that just love him.
The verdict was not guilty.
Oh, so who?
Andrea's family was absolutely stunned. Priscilla and her family were not in the courthouse that day. They had waited to hear the verdict. She was still living in the mansion, which, by the way, I can't even imagine living someplace where my daughter was murdered down in the basement.
Bless her heart.
So they were all there waiting, and a news outlet called her to inform her of the verdict. And she just expressed her absolute disbelief. Of course, she lost it. And said he'll have to answer to God. That's the only one that can't be bought.
That's right.
And she is right. Okay.
That's
Tarrant County Prosecutor Tim Curry considered trying Cullen for Stan Farr's murder. And when I know you're over there thinking, what do you mean considered
Right.
trying him
That's
for standby
exactly what I'm
murder?
thinking.
Exactly. I know I could see it on your face. He was quoted as saying, it's always been a consideration, but I think you have to sit down and analyze this case. You have to analyze what the jury did and why they did it. And I couldn't agree more, Tim, okay?
Right.
But you have to analyze why the jury voted that way and why they did what they did, and then do something different next time. You don't just not bring
Exactly.
charges, okay, because you think you know the verdict. But the state didn't take him to trial for Stan's death. He was indicted for his murder, but then they dropped the charges after this trial. I just can't even.
No. So they didn't have any other suspects, anything else to go on.
Nope. And he also wasn't indicted for the attempted murder of Priscilla or Bubba Gavril. Because if you'll recall, they were both shot and he was trying to kill them too. So they felt like the state of Texas felt like they knew what the outcome would be for all three of those charges. So they just said, eh, let's just save taxpayer dollars, I guess. I don't accept this. I still think they should have made an example out of him and tried him for every single thing they could.
I mean, 'cause what's the reasonable doubt? Like, you've got to have that doubt to say that he's not guilty.
Actually had read this was the second murder trial because the first murder trial, the judge declared a mistrial because of
Oh.
jury conduct. So they moved this second trial to Amarillo, which is up in the panhandle of Texas.
Where not
It's
so many people knew him
right.
since he was a socialite.
Exactly. So they had a pretty, I don't know, unfamiliar jury. Like I said, I still think they should have made an example. N
Yeah.
not just an example, but try every single charge and get something to stick,
Right.
even if he would have been convicted on an attempted murder charge. It's better than nothing. You know what I'm saying?
True, true. Right.
Try and find one non-prejudicial jury to actually rule in the favor. I mean, you can't say, oh, well, this jury let him off, so another set of 12 people will do the same thing.
Right.
Hey, Tarrant County. There is no statute of limitations for murder, so why don't we bring charges now? He's still alive.
Okay.
Well, everything went back to normal for Cullen Davis back in 1977 after the trial, when he was acquitted for Andrea's murder.
Did Karen stay with him?
She did. He resumed his life of luxury with her. I call her Karen. I can't recall. No, wait, he was their master.
Okay.
Because during the trial, she testified, oh, yes, he was there. So she had changed her story on the stand. So I think she's a wiffle waffle.
Sounds like
But
it.
he was going back out to dinner, out on the town. He just picked up where he left off. Colin himself said nothing had changed for him in an interview in one of the many interviews he's done.
Well,
But
good
he
for
said,
him.
right, he's like, nothing changed for me. So he obviously didn't have to deal with the fish eye from anyone. Nobody was caring. I guess that cloud of suspicion that probably followed him around and that other people could see, he wasn't affected by it in any way.
Everybody's like, oh, poor Colin. Look what he had to go through.
I guess. Because when you're that rich and you have that many friends and you're basically paying for people to be your friend, who's gonna stand up against him?
Right.
Not many people. Now, you know what else picked up where it left off?
What's that?
The divorce.
Okay.
It still wasn't finalized.
Priscilla still had to go through all of that.
Exactly.
Oh,
She had lost her child,
jeez.
she had lost her boyfriend, and she's still going through this divorce. And that's all I have for you for this episode. I'm really sorry to leave you hanging, but there, like, you're probably thinking, well, what more could have happened and why is there a part two? Just hold on to your butts. Things are about to get super wild. So we will see you on Friday. You won't have to wait very long for part two. Don't forget to check out our photos on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast. And send us a message via email, via the internet, at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. Hey, Lena, did you know we have people listening all over the world? Like,
what?
Not just in the U.S., but we have Canadians. Hey,
hey. Hello.
Canadians. We have Swedes.
Well, that's amazing.
We have people in the U.K. Yeah. My second home. Australia, Germany, Netherlands, Russia.
What?
So shout out to all you guys across the globe.
Thank you all for listening. Wow.
We feel really cool that we're broadcast around the world.
Wow. That is cool. Yeah,
and it just shows that not just Americans are crazy. We're all kind of crazy.
We all want to know the deets.
Yeah, we all want to know the deets. If you love our podcast, will you please like give us a 5-star rating? That way more true crime fans can find us easily on all platforms.
That'd be really review cool. And yeah, share our Instagram page or, you know, tell others about us so that we can grow and keep on doing this thing.
We're having a lot of fun. And the best part that we get to spend time together.
Yeah. If anything that we get out of this is that we just get to hang out.
Yeah. It's fun. It's good times.
I mean, not together. We hang out on FaceTime.
Yeah. From our closets, our respective closets.
But thank you.
We love you. You're my boy, Blue.